Well, we're going to Obadiah tonight. Obadiah is kind of hard to find. You know, that's the shortest book in the Old Testament. And yet a very powerful book to those to whom it was written. I mean, the message of Obadiah, this prophet of God, was a very serious message. You know, this is a letter or a book that was, well, perhaps written during the time of Joram. He was one of the kings of Judah. And Judah was having trouble all around them, including from Edom, which was just kind of to the southeast of Judah. Well, it may have been during that time when Obadiah penned the message from God concerning Edom. Well, admittedly, we don't know the timing for sure. In fact, we don't even know for sure which Obadiah was the writer. I mean, the Old Testament lists, I think it's about a half a dozen Obadiahs. And, of course, some of them are sort of easily eliminated as not being the writer of this book, but probably comes down to a couple that would most likely be the one. But this much we do know, that Edom long held hatred for their blood brothers Israel. And that goes back to the days long before their father Esau. And throughout history, the pride of Edom and their indignation got in the way of good judgment and caused problems between them and Israel. That much we can know for sure. Well, Edom is another name for Esau, as Israel is another name for Jacob. And so when we talk about Edom, or we talk about the Edomites, we're talking about the descendants of Esau, the twin brother of Jacob. Now, there was sibling rivalry that carried on, you know, through the days of Edom and Israel. That was first found back in the days of Esau and Jacob. Remember back in Genesis chapter 25, the twins struggled in their mother's womb. And in Genesis 25 still, Esau sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob stole Esau's blessing as the firstborn in Genesis 27. Well, some of those events then that kind of set some things in place of this ugly relationship, we might say, between the two nations. Well, after the problems of Jacob and Esau, Esau settled to the south at Mount Seir, and of them, you know, they became, the Edomites became a great nation, a powerful nation. Not as much as some of the nations around, but a nation of some power of note. And in time, Jacob and Esau, well, they reconciled, but their descendants were often at odds with one another. And we can see that when we read through the latter part of the book of Genesis. And because of that hatred, I mean, it was even still just such that when Israel was trying to make their way to the promised land, that they needed to pass through Edom. Do you remember that? That would have been the easiest way on the king's highway. I mean, going through Edom was not an easy thing to do because of just the terrain. But they wanted to come up the king's highway, and Moses had promised, we won't get off to the left, we won't get off to the right, we just want to come through. And Edom refused. And it really just goes back to this ugliness that started with Jacob and Esau, and then the generations carried that on. Well, let's just try to get in our mind here a little bit, because I think there's some importance to this. Just where Edom is at. When we think about Israel, you know, in this whole region right here, Edom is down here. The Mount Seir, or the mountains of Mount Seir, are right here. And a good part of Edom is pretty rough terrain. It's more of a desert-type area. And in this region in here and up through here, there's a lot of rock clefts. I mean, it's a rough area. And so this is why Moses wanted to bring the children of Israel up the King's Highway, up through here, to bring them up through Moab and to cross over up here. But Edom said no. The king of Edom said no. So Moses had to lead the children of Israel then around this way, around Mount Hor. And they kind of came in some on the edge of Edom around this way and worked their way up. That was a rough way to go. That was tough territory to work their way across, you know, in doing that. And so, I mean, it looks a little like this. Well, in fact, it looks a lot like this. These are pictures that would be taken from the very region of Edom that we are talking about. And this would be part of the area somewhere through here where Israel and Moses and the Israelites would have had to pass, making their way to the north. And so we can just see the difficulty of some of that. You know, in those clefts, those rock clefts in there, we find that there was areas where people built. Now, you know, the Edomites, particularly as we get a little bit later in time, were many of them kind of a nomadic kind of people, where they didn't settle in and have houses per se, but they lived in tents. And we can read about them through time, through Bible history. There was a time when Edom was subject to King David, 2 Samuel chapter 8. And at times we can see them even as an ally to Israel in 2 Kings chapter 3. Well, those times seem to be few when they were really aligned with Israel. But during the reign of Jehoram, Edom revolted against Judah, 2 Kings chapter 8. And maybe in part because of even the terrain where they lived, they felt somewhat secure. I mean, they lived in caves and they built homes in the red sandstone of the northern part of Edom. And, you know, they weren't easy to get at. In fact, in a lot of places they built, it's almost like cities to a degree, in those rock clefts, in these narrow canyons, where, you know, it was kind of hard for an army to have much effect on coming after them. I mean, they could, as long as they could fight the people off up at the top, they couldn't get down to the bottom and really wage a war or hurt their people. And so I guess what I'm saying is, I think there were times that the Edomites felt pretty secure with where they lived and how they lived. They weren't as concerned about their armies. These are just some pictures that, I mean, obviously, places that you could even go to and visit today. It'd be in the country of Jordan today, where you see these places where years ago the Edomites would have lived. The Word of God came to the Edomites through the prophet Obadiah. I want us to read through some of the verses here in this text and see what we can pull out from it. This is a powerful message that's going to this people that thought they were self-sufficient, thought they could rail up against God and against His people, but that was a bad choice. Looking at Obadiah chapter 1, verse 1. This is the vision of Obadiah. This is what the Sovereign Lord says about Edom. We have heard a message from the Lord. An envoy was sent to the nations to say, "Rise and let us go against her for battle. See, I will make you small among the nations. You will be utterly despised. The pride of your heart has deceived you. You who live in the clefts of the rocks and make your home on the heights. You who say to yourself, 'Who can bring me down to the ground?' Though you soar like an eagle and make your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord." So we are reminded that here, I mean, this is the word of the Lord. I know Obadiah holds the pen, but sometimes we start thinking, here's what Obadiah is going to do. Well, no, it's not what the prophets are going to do. It's what they are saying what the Lord is going to do. And even as the Lord says, the Edomites are saying of themselves, "Who can bring me down?" Well, the Lord can. And that's what He's saying. That's His point with this right here. Edom has forgotten her insignificance. They have puffed themselves up. They've become full of themselves. And now nations are being called against her. The word of the Lord is serious and it's to the point. Edom, being so puffed up, has lost sight of the fact that it's God who can bring other nations against her and bring her down. Pride is the problem. Pride is her weakness, and she thinks that she is somebody, and it's her heart that is all wrong. That's the problem with Edom as a nation. Well, pride has always been an issue for man. Pride has always been something that will bring us down. Pride causes us to look at ourselves in a self-appreciating kind of way, where we just think better of ourselves than we should. Sometimes our self-worth, our strength, or our wisdom is not as great as what we think it is. We can inflate any of those easily. Our judgment and our what we are worth to others, you know, may not be as much as others think. You know, there are some lessons learned. If you have a marker, put it here, because we're going to look at a couple of other passages. Turn to Proverbs chapter 16. Proverbs chapter 16, in a very simple way, King Solomon has something to say about pride. Proverbs 16 and verse 18, pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before the fall. In fact, he says this a number of times throughout the Proverbs. We might find it in the New Testament too. It's a powerful point that sometimes our pride can get in the way of ourselves. Our pride can get puffed up in such a way that we don't realize that we are about to fall over ourselves, fall flat on our face. And so there's a simple life lesson about to be demonstrated to Edom, that their pride is a sign of arrogance, and God is going to take care of that. He is going to punish them. God's going to bring Edom down. And it's like God is trying to say, don't underestimate my power. It's easy to do that when if we have self-inflated our own worth and our own ability, at the same time we are deflating God's power. And God's trying to turn that back around and say, you need to listen. You need to understand who you are, and you need to understand who I am. That's what he's saying. You know, others have fallen largely, at least in part, by their pride. Go to Isaiah. We're looking at Isaiah chapter 13. Isaiah chapter 13. We're going to take up reading here at verse 9. Isaiah 13 and verse 9. See, the day of the Lord is coming, a cruel day with wrath and fierce anger, to make the land desolate and destroy the sinners within it. The stars of heaven and their constellations will not show their light. The rising sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. I will punish the world for its evil, the wicked for their sins, and I will put an end to the arrogance of the haughty, and will humble the pride of the ruthless. Well, it could be spoken in a generic way to any nation, or to any of us it could be spoken. But that was written more specifically to Babylon. This was part of the woes of God against Babylon, that great and powerful nation that had conquered so much. But God was going to turn against them, and God was going to bring them down. You see, Babylon had become that way, proud and arrogant, thinking that no one could take them down. But they should never discount what God could do. Their pride was a factor in their fall. Well, what does that mean to you and me? There needs to be some application we can make. You know, pride can cause us to value our judgment and our worth too much. God blesses those who submit to Him, but the prideful are too caught up in themselves. The prideful are those who will fail to turn to God. We live in a day where for so many there's a lack of interest or desire to follow God because I think in part because we've become so self-sufficient. We think so well of ourselves, what we can do and what we can accomplish, that we discount what God has done to bring us here. And we fail to turn to God and listen to Him. We see that. We read about Edom, we read about Babylon, and we can see how God was speaking to them and taking them down. We think, well, that's some bad people right there. They've messed up. But is God speaking to us in the same way? Isn't it a message that we need to take to heart because it could apply to us in just the same way? You know, there's a warning that's given. And it's given many times in Scripture to humble yourself. That when we think we are the strongest, we may be the weakest. Those times when we think that we've made it in life, we think that we've just got things together, we think we've come to such a great understanding of God's Word that we've just got it on every point and every aspect, when we're so prideful in ourselves, is when we are setting ourselves up for the fall. Look with me to 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 6. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon Him, for He cares for you. The call and the admonition from the Apostle Peter is that we will humble ourselves, and that if God sees fit, He will lift us up. That we have to be careful not to put ourselves in such a position as to lift ourselves up, put ourselves up on a pedestal, and ignore the will of God. Turn that around. We need to be a humble people that is submissive to God. And if God sees the need, if God sees fit, He is the one who will do the exalting. That's what Peter was trying to say. Well, back in our text, you know, Edom, you've become too puffed up. That's what God said to them. Well, you look in our text a little farther, and we read again, beginning at verse 5, the message now is, Edom, you're going to be completely destroyed. At verse 5. If thieves came to you, if robbers in the night, oh, what a disaster awaits you. Would they not steal only as much as they wanted? If grape pickers came to you, would they not leave a few grapes? But how Esau will be ransacked, his hidden treasures pillaged. All your allies will force you to the border. Your friends will deceive and overpower you. Those who eat your bread will set a trap for you, but you will not detect it. In that day, declares the Lord, will I not destroy the wise men of Edom, men of understanding in the mountains of Esau? Your warriors, O Teman, will be terrified, and everyone in Esau's mountains will be cut down in the slaughter. Let's just stop there for a minute. It's not a pretty picture. I mean, God is saying that, you know, even if thieves came and cleaned you out, they wouldn't get everything. You'd still find a few grapes that you could eat. You know, they could steal, but they wouldn't get everything. But when I come in judgment, there will be nothing left. It will be total. It will be complete. And so as bad as you may think of what would happen if our enemies came against us or we had thieves that came and stole, how devastating that would be, it's as though God is saying, well, that's nothing. You should fear much more than the thief that may come and take your possessions. Fear all the more my judgment. Fear when I come upon you. Your deeds will return upon your head, is what He's going to tell them later. This is all going to come around and get you. The sins that brought about this punishment are going to be spelled out in a very clear way. Verse 10. Because of the violence against your brother Jacob, you will be covered with shame. You will be destroyed forever. On the day you stood aloof while strangers carried off his wealth and foreigners entered his gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, you were like one of them. You should not look down on your brother in the day of his misfortune, nor rejoice over the people of Judah in the day of their destruction, nor boast so much in the day of their trouble. You should not march through the gates of my people in the day of their disaster, nor look down on them in their calamity in the day of their disaster, nor seize their wealth in the day of their disaster. You should not wait at the crossroads to cut down their fugitives, nor hand over their survivors in the day of their trouble. There were times when Israel or Judah was facing problems from their neighbors and from enemies. That Edom was right there. Remember, Edom's not that far away from Judah. And they could see, they would hear about, they would know that their brother, God considers them to be the brother, you know, to that the Edomites are brothers to the children of Israel. And God is admonishing them, you shouldn't have stood by and just watched. These were your brethren. And you didn't go help. And you watched them as they were pillaged. You watched them as they were killed. And you didn't do anything. And so even if they didn't have a direct part in what was going on, they stood by and they watched it. You know, as generations went on, there are some that probably forgot about that. But God didn't. He still remembered that. You know, the exact reason for God's anger here? Well, I'm not positive. I'm not sure. And scholars kind of debate about some things like that. I mean, maybe it was the rebellion of Edom against King Joram of Judah. You know, and then the looting of Jerusalem that took place by the Philistines or the Arabians. Or maybe it could have been some other events in history that we might read about, but, well, we can never really just know for sure. But we know this much positively. God was upset with them. He was displeased with their attitude. They had done nothing to help their brothers, but they contributed to their fall. And God saw them. There's another point here, too. Did you remember the part there about the friends? About, you know, your friends? Well, the friends that Edom relied on were not really, you know, friends. You know, their friends did nothing to promote a good relationship with God or a good relationship with their brethren. I mean, maybe it made Edom feel big. Or maybe it made them feel a part of something bigger, that there were other nations around that was their friends. But God is saying your friends aren't any good for you. Your friends are not really your friends. There's some lessons to be learned from that for us too. That we need to choose our friends carefully to make sure that we have friends that would be pleasing to God. If our friends do not draw us closer to God, they are not good friends. They are not the kind of friends that we need to have. And so God is saying then in the text that He is going to destroy, He said, I'm going to destroy your wise and mighty, the ones that you seem to depend on, the ones that you think are just so helpful. And why? Well, because of their violence against their brother Jacob. Some lessons learned out of that part of the text. God watches what we do. You know, there may be some times that we do something or even contemplate doing something that we think maybe God doesn't see or doesn't know. Hebrews chapter 4 in verse 13. And there is no creature hidden from His sight, but all things are naked and open to the eyes of Him to whom we must give account. There's nothing that we can hide from God. And He will make judgment on us in view of our actions, in view of what we do. And we need to consider our attitude toward our brethren and to help build up, not tear down. How we treat our brethren affects our relationship with the Lord. It's not only about our relationship one with another, but it has something to do with our relationship with the Lord, too. 1 Corinthians chapter 8. 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 12. Oh, but when you sin thus against your brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. when we are not concerned, when we do not love, when we do things that may damage the faith of our brethren, or that offends their conscience, the Lord looks at it as though we have sinned against Him. You have to let that sink in for just a minute. I mean, you know, sometimes we think about relationships with other people not as strongly as we should. I mean, we would get concerned if someone said, well, you're sinning against the Lord. Well, if we sin, if we offend the conscience of our brethren, if we do something that damages their faith, we are sinning against Christ. That's what the apostle is saying. It's similar to what God said to Edom long before, when they showed no care or concern for their brother Judah. And in some further application, if we go to Proverbs 24, go back to Proverbs again, chapter 24, and we begin at verse 17. King Solomon said, and I would think King Solomon is one that probably had some personal experience with this. Do not gloat when your enemy falls. When he stumbles, do not let your heart rejoice, or the Lord will see and disapprove and turn His wrath away from him. It was a message that Edom didn't get and didn't understand. Well, one final point here in the last part of our text in Obadiah. Edom's past is coming back to haunt her. Verse 15. The day of the Lord is near for all nations. As you have done, it will be done to you. Your deeds will return upon your own head. Just as you drank on my holy hill, so all the nations will drink continually, as they will drink and drink, and be as if they had never been. But on Mount Zion will be deliverance. It will be holy, and the house of Jacob will possess its inheritance. The house of Jacob will be a fire, and the house of Joseph will be a flame, and the house of Esau will be stubble, and they will set it on fire and consume it. There will be no survivors from the house of Esau. People from the Negev will occupy the mountains of Esau. The people from the foothills will possess the land of the Philistines. They will occupy the fields of Ephraim and Samaria, and Benjamin will possess Gilead. This company of Israelite exiles who are in Canaan will possess the land as far as Zarephath. The exiles from Jerusalem who are in Sepharad will possess the towns of the Negev. Deliverers will go up on Mount Zion to govern the mountains of Esau, and the kingdom will be the Lord's. Your deeds will return to your head. Judgment's going to come back around, is what the Lord's saying. You know, the judgment will be real. The judgment is going to come from the Lord, and it's coming sometime soon because He said it's near. As Edom did to Judah, will be done to them. Sometimes we use the phrase, what goes around comes around. That's what God is saying to Edom. And here's the real point. That Israel will be exalted. Israel will be raised up. Deliverance and holiness will be found at Mount Zion, that spiritual house, not Mount Seir. It's not going to be the mountain that Esau went to. It's not going to be the kingdom that Esau established. But that kingdom that's going to endure is Mount Zion. Well, Zion has long been recognized as Jerusalem. And here I'm sure that God is not talking about even if a physical kingdom. Again, it's a glimpse. It's a look into a kingdom that's not going to be destroyed. Spiritual Israel, Mount Zion. Here is where the Lord's people will be. And so the children of Israel will possess Edom and will possess the surrounding nations. The ultimate rule will be that of the Lord, verse 21. And the kingdom will be the Lord's. That kingdom of people of all nations will be the kingdom of the Lord. The battle is His. And regardless of what happens in these physical battles and how they may end, a battle is won and battle is lost. There's one, another one won, another one lost. All of those battles, these physical battles in time, they're written in the annals of history. And they mean something to some people. But in the end, what will those battles mean? But nothing. But the spiritual battle of Mount Zion is the battle that endures. God says He will deliver Israel. It's a spiritual victory over the rebellious. Edom becomes a symbol of the end for those who rebel against God. For what they did, for their attitude, Edom was going to be judged. Instead of trying to destroy Jerusalem, they should have been building it up. But they were against God in that way. That spiritual Zion is a place to which we can all turn. Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12 gives us a glimpse of this beautiful and powerful kingdom. Hebrews 12 and verse 22. But you have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to the innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn who are registered in heaven, to God the judge of all, to the spirits of just men made perfect, to Jesus the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaks better things than that of Abel. That's the kingdom that we are a part of. That's what the Hebrew writer was trying to tell those Christians. That no longer are you looking for the coming of a kingdom, but those who are of the assembly and church of the firstborn are those who are in that kingdom, that eternal kingdom that is made by God. So, some points that we can make as we conclude. We look at some of the mistakes that Edom made. As we've said before, sometimes we look at these of old and we say, well, what were they thinking? Why did they do that? And we can see that their heart was all wrong. But the message is just the same for us. Just as powerful. And if our heart is not right, if our focus, if our desire is not on Jehovah God and His will, well, we're no different than Edom. Edom is used as a symbol of a spiritually unrepentant people. People in rebellion against God. And the lesson being offered by God today is that we should learn from Edom and those of that mind and make sure that we're not following in the same footsteps. Make sure pride doesn't get in the way, but that we humble ourselves before God. I hope that will be helpful to us. Just some things for us to think about as once again we begin a new week. Trying to set in place and in focus the kind of people that God would want us to be. If in any way you need to respond to the gospel of Christ, don't delay. Please come as we stand and sing.